L-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
This incredibly corrupt private plane gift, which he is... He's just going to post through it. He just keeps posting through it. We've really reoriented the moral compass of America, in which we are now envious of the petro state autocrats in the Middle East. And we're really harsh on the democratic allies that have traditionally been.
But that has been allowed to happen because there has been no one in political leadership who has a ball among them. Not one scrota among them to actually stand up and go, no. I mean, we just got an Air Force One. Do we get a new plane each administration?
In this case, it wouldn't be, because eventually it would be handed to the Trump library.
Right. And if you believe Donald Trump is not going to fly around on that bad boy
That's the most ridiculous part.
Well, I'm looking forward to a little fun today here on the Bulwark platform. I'm so glad you could join us because my guest is a longtime buddy of mine, Sam Stein, the managing editor of the Bulwark. So, yeah, kind of like, you know, the boss. He is just a real good journalist, real good Washington reporter. Prior to his current assignment, he was the White House editor for Politico, a politics editor at the Daily Beast, and covered national politics for HuffPost, where he was one of the site's first political reporters. He's a frequent contributor on my network at MSNBC. He's a funny guy, smart guy, talented journalist, and I look forward to welcoming him to the Michael Steele podcast right after this. Hey, folks, it's me. Welcome back to the Michael Steele podcast. As always, a special treat when you decide to grab yourself a nice little adult beverage in a coffee cup.
Adult beverage. It's 10:30 a.m.
Dude.
It's that type of day.
How long have you known me, man? Come on now.
Well, I didn't realize it was that type of podcast. I would have had
It's that type of podcast every day.
That's why I put the Jaeger in here. Okay, good.
It's called a G&T at 10. We kind of keep it clean so people think it's water. Anyway, my buddy Sam Stein, welcome to the podcast, man. It's good to have you.
Great being here. What an honor.
I love it. I love it. You treat me too kindly, my friend. Hey, you know, before we get into politics and all of that stuff and news of the day and the work you're doing at the Bulwark, and your pedigree has been one I've actually had the pleasure to watch over the years when you first really kind of came on the scene in your writing, your appearances, certainly on MSNBC, Morning Joe for particular. They love having a little fun with Sam Stein.
Too much.
Yeah, right. Right. And you're filling in and hosting and stuff like that. You have such a wide background of experiences. How, when you're looking at how you assess this period to do your job, and we were talking, I asked a little bit before we started about the family and everything, and then you're balancing that against the family. Are there days when you're sitting there and you're working and is like, my kid just won't believe this? Or I gotta be on top of this because it's going to be important for future generations. How do reporters today work in an environment in which they're, you know, face forward on television? I mean, you know, before you could just hide behind, not hide, but you would be behind the words you wrote, right? They'd be right on paper or on a site somewhere. But now you're a little bit, you're a lot more face forward. How does that change your coverage of the news and how do you report it for future generations?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I started back in 2006, 2007, and it was kind of like, there was no Twitter back then. It was just, you know, there was blogs and, you know, even online only journalism was considered right exotic. I would say that, it's kind of, it works both ways. One is that things have gotten way more supercharged, obviously. Even just the news cycle is far more fast. It turns over way more quickly. The impulse that you have to sort of never sign offline because you might miss something is way more pronounced than it was even back then. On the flip side, it's a lot easier to get information and to stay on top of things, right? Like it's continuous. If you set up these information feeds, you can always be reading stuff. So there's a bit of a back and forth on that. I do, you know, there are times where I feel like I've overloaded on it and I feel like it's too overwhelming and that I do need to sign off of it. Now, I'm not trying to pretend like this is like some grand burden, right? It's like, you know, I'm not in the mines, you know, but it can be a lot. And you sort of recognize that it's kind of taking you over. And certainly when you have kids like I do, you fight the impulse to be on your phone at all hours. And I'm not very good at that. I wish I was better at it. And then on the public facing stuff, you know, that's a whole nother thing because, back in 06, 07, you know, I wasn't on TV that much or anything like that. But even when I started going on TV, you know, the chances for interactions with people were more limited than they are now. And that, like, it wasn't like, you know, you didn't see all the nastiness in your feed and the feedback that you get. Now, the flip side of that is that I kind of, not that I enjoy it, but I don't mind it as much as other people do. I used to do this thing. I don't do it as much anymore, but I used to try to find the people who were like particularly horrible to me on Twitter. And I used to try to find their phone numbers and call them up and just to be like, yo, let's talk it out. Like, why did you say that about me? Like, you know, let's have a conversation just to see if I could like reason with these people. Now, oftentimes you couldn't, but oftentimes they'd just be like, you know, I didn't mean to say that. That was
right.
So I have like a weird impulse about it, not to say I don't get affected by it. But I encourage the reporters who I now edit, like, you know, what I try to tell them is that, it's hard, but you do need to recognize that so much of this is just, theatrical, like the anger that people are showing online and the nastiness and the harshness of the feedback is not actually grounded critique of your work. It's not real. So much of it's not real, and that you have to have an ability to sort of push it out and compartmentalize it. And I try to do that myself, and oftentimes it's not easy. And but that's just part of the gig.
Yeah, it is, and it's funny. I mean, for me, you have been a journalist. You have been, you know, White House editor for Politico. You've been at the Huffington Post, and now you're the managing editor at the Bulwark. So you've got good journalism roots, as you said, starting out in 2006, as they used to say, as a cub reporter, if you will, and sort of growing your way through the game, and you know, developing the skill sets, and then the environment changes, where you're no longer the reporter, but you're the target. In 10 years after you start in the business, you're now labeled the enemy of the state. What you do is considered fake. Right. And that alters the way journalists approach their stories. We went through the period where every story was basically, you know, a 600 word article was 90% fact check, you know, and the real essence of what was going on and what was happening to the country, to the government, was suffused into storylines around the rightness or wrongness of what Trump just said or what some official just said or did. And when you look at the last couple of White House correspondence dinners, the focus now on the First Amendment and the craft of journalism and leveling that up, this sense of trying to get back to that, where, you know, it's about reporting, it's about the accuracy of the story and the facts. Talk about what that's been like. I know you have conversations with your colleagues about this. You guys are swimming against the same tide that, you know, politicos like myself are in. I think a lot more freedom than you do in many respects, because I basically don't give a shit, because I've been in the room and I know what's in the room. And so that's one piece, but you covered the room, and that's a different posture.
I guess there's a couple ways to think about it. Like, one is, I would rather that they, attack us than ignore us, because it mm-hmm. does signify that, you know, what we do matters. I mean, the real problem comes when the institution is so insignificant and so marginalized that they don't really care. Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I'm thrilled to be called enemy of the state. Like, yeah, I think there's a fairly nasty.
You wear it well. I mean,
thank you. I've been trying. You know, I don't know. Different outlets have to approach this in different ways. Like, you know, if I were
how do you guys approach it at the Bulwark?
If I were a Politico, it's different than I approach at the Bulwark. But the Bulwark, for us, it's like what we're trying to do is just be. I know this sounds so quaint, but it's like honest and fair, right? Like, honest and fair. And our view is that, you know, people need to sort of grapple with the stakes of what's happening,
right?
And you shouldn't sugarcoat it, and you shouldn't put, you know, some both-siderism, you know, wrapping around it. You should be upfront about it, and that can take the form in a variety of different types of journalism. So, you know, we have like incredibly unbelievable essays and commentary and analysis. And like, I don't know if he gets enough credit, but like JVL, I mean, like every single newsletter he writes, I think he's like the voice of, I'm obviously biased, but I do think he's the voice of the era.
You are spot on.
I mean, he's the voice of the era and what he's doing. And like, that's one form of it. And then, you know, what we've decided to do, you know, we've hired a bunch of newsletter writers, and what we've done is we've said, look, these are the areas where we think are the most meaningful coverage areas for the Trump administration. And we hired newsletter writers on those areas. So we made a determination, like immigration, obviously, first and mm-hmm. foremost, you know, the revamping of government and what Doge and Trump are trying to do. Democrats and how they get back into power, right? Like, and then the online right, which is really, you know, used to be, as you know, used to be a bunch of weirdos and gadflies, and now is the power center. They're basically right. I mean, when Laura Loomer can have a bunch of national security officials sacked, you take her seriously. So those were like, so we did it through reporting, but I think the through line of it has always been that, you know, you have to be honest about the stakes, and you have to be fair in what you write. And if you can hit those two metrics, it doesn't quite matter all that much what they call you or how they dismiss you or whatever. Now, I think if you're looking at it in a macro sense, I'm deeply troubled by the fact that there's been a very concerted and effective effort to marginalize the press and diminish its impact, and try to convince, you know, half or more of the public that you shouldn't trust what you read. I think the damage is very evident to that, right? Like, we can spend hours talking about how damaging that's been. And so, you know, I hope we can reverse those trends. I hope we can get to a place where people understand that what they read is, you know, it's not always going to be satisfactory to you, but it is going right. to be an honest attempt to get to the truth. But those are larger trends that
they know, are. Yeah. They are. So let's talk about what you're writing about. Yeah. Let's talk about the news. What's the lead on the Bulwark as we get up today? And when we're doing this, is right. early morning, folks. It's early morning for me, folks. I'm just saying.
This Even with the booze, I feel like lead today has got to be Trump in Saudi Arabia and Qatar. I mean, I just think if you watch the spectacle, there's both sort of the micro elements of right. it, like what are the deals that are being done? This incredibly corrupt private plane gift, which he is, he's going to post through it. He just keeps posting through it. But then there's like the larger picture, which is, and this was our Morning Shots newsletter lead, which is like, this is a guy in Trump who clearly has a kind of a tyrant envy, and he's over there and he's talking about how great the marble is in these palaces and how lovely, you know, the Saudi Arabian government, you know, can organize its citizenry. And you're like, this is not, you know, this is not sort of traditional, right? Like this is a break. He confessed his love for MBS and said he may have loved him too much. And I just think if you actually, and occasionally you do have to do this, you step back and you say, we've really reoriented the moral compass of America, in which we are now envious of the autocrats, the petro state autocrats in the Middle East. And we're really, you know, harsh on the democratic allies that have traditionally been.
But that's the part that drives me absolutely sideways, is that we are not. One man is.
One man who has managed to reorient millions of people. But yeah.
But that's my point. That has been allowed to happen because right. there has been no one in political leadership who has a ball among them, right? Not one scrota among them to actually stand up and go, no to the fact that you look at Trump, the Trump family business alone.
Yeah.
Right now in the Middle East consists of Trump International Hotel and Tower in Dubai, the Trump International Golf Club in Doha, Trump Tower Jeddah in Saudi Arabia, Trump Hotel Oman, Crypto Venture, Kushner's Investment Fund, right? Live right. Golf.
Right.
Where, and of course, the $400 million airplane we don't need.
Right.
I mean, we just got an Air Force One. How many do we get a new plane each administration? This is bull. I mean,
well, in this case, it wouldn't be, because eventually it would be headed to the Trump library.
Right. It'll be heading. Yeah. And if you believe Donald Trump is not going to fly around on that bad boy
that's the most ridiculous part. I'm just going to put it in my lobby, please. That's
right. So why are we so damn gullible? Why? I mean, you cover the Hill. You talk to these people. They won't talk to me as much anymore because my tolerance level is zero for the excuse making. And right. I'm just like, what is it? I don't understand. Can someone just stand up and go, time out?
It's not even that they're gullible. It's like, so Joe Perticone is our Hill guy. And, you know, like he was out there yesterday and talking to these folks. And it's like, you know, you have to understand in any one of these stories, the through line is that Trump is a genius and anyone who questions him is suckers. And so it's not just that you're rationalizing this bizarre gift. It's that you are, mocking people who would dare question it. And Trump, you know, they're suckers if you don't take
right.
this. Now, I will say I've been somewhat surprised, pleasantly, I guess, that like there are a few Republicans who are like, this is a little too much. Like, you know, we talked about Laura Loomer. She was not a fan of it. Ted Cruz, Ron Johnson, they're both like, you know, this is a bad look. So there is, maybe we've hit a place where people are discomforted enough that they're willing to talk about it. But by and large, they're, you know, doing the usual evasion, saying, I didn't see it, I don't know enough about it, or yeah, he's smart to take it. And I think what's happened is, One, people are just totally, you know, petrified of Trump and the Republican Party, and they don't want to speak out about it. And two is that he's kind of normalized the type of open corruption that some people are fine with. I was making this parallel on Nicole Wallace's show yesterday, but like, you know, Hunter Biden was doing business deals with Burisma in Ukraine when his father was not in office, when he was out of office as vice president. And there was real questions about whether Burisma was using Hunter Biden to sort of get in with good favor with Joe Biden, and, you know, whether money actually made it into Joe Biden's account. This was a subject of an impeachment inquiry by James Comer. In this case, it's like, you don't even have, I mean, you mentioned the son's business deals, but in this case, it's just a gift straight to Donald Trump. And he's like, yeah, of course I'm accepting it. And it's going in my library, and then you'd be a sucker to question it. And I am president, by the way. And it's like, the levels are just so distinct. And yet, you know, I don't
know. So you just drew the parallel.
Right.
And I had this debate yesterday on my show, The Weeknight, weeknights at 7 p.m. on
Good plug. Always plugging. I love it.
Always plugging, baby. That's right. The Bulwark and The Weeknight. This is the combo meal. But I was making this point the other night, last night, about the fact that we sit here and we look at what Donald Trump is doing, and we know. I mean, you even had Nikki Haley tweet out regarding the plane, if Joe Biden did this, we Republicans would be losing our minds.
Oh yeah. And you can say that about a lot of things, you know.
You can say that about a lot of things, but the point for me is that for some reason, the Democrats aren't able to make the constant narrative or tell the constant story of this corruption and to ingrain it. I mean, when you stop and think about it, Hunter Biden, during the time that Joe Biden was in office, was mentioned, covered over 130,000 times during that period. That constant boom, boom. Let me tell you how bad this guy is. The Biden crime family, you know, Burisma this, laptop that, et cetera. Republicans are very, and I guess bad actors acting in bad faith are really good at perpetuating the badness, right? In other words,
It's like, it's like the Hillary Clinton email thing, right? It's the same exact stuff. They use Signal to discuss war plans, and you're like, wait, do you remember when? But this is kind of, they call this the hack gap, right? Right. Like, this is the way it's traditionally been. Now, I do think Democrats are trying to make an issue out of this. One thing that has always been a kind of a problem for the party during the Trump era is that there's just a lot of shit happening. Right? So you spend a lot of time going on one controversy, and then suddenly he pops up and there's another thing. And, I'm not saying like, well, whatever. You have to end up choosing which ones you think.
You got to choose. Yeah. You got to choose.
All right, but we're in this case, he sort of handed them something that's pretty easy to choose.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Sure.
We're going to take a quick break with Sam Stein, my man. I've gotten to know Sam for a long time now. I think I've known you since before you were certainly before your kids, but before you got married.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wait, when did you become chairman?
2009.
I got married that year, so
I think it was around that time. So, but and he hasn't aged a bit, folks.
No,
you know,
not one day.
What we do, boo.
Like this Benjamin buttoning this thing. Yeah,
folks, we'll be right back right after this. All right, folks, let's take a quick break from the discussion and talk about protecting yourself in the digital world we live in. Because whether you're scrolling the news, booking travel, or doing research, you deserve online privacy that works as hard as you do. That's why my team uses Surfshark VPN for this podcast. It encrypts your internet activity, keeping your private data away from trackers, hackers, and anyone else trying to snoop. You can even safely browse on public Wi-Fi at airports, hotels, coffee shops, you name it. And here's a game changer. With just one subscription, Surfshark secures all your devices, laptops, phones, tablets. You're covered. Plus, if you're traveling or living abroad, Surfshark lets you break through GEO restrictions so you can still catch your favorite shows, news, and sports, just like you're back at home. And let's not forget Surfshark Search. No ads, no tracking, just clean, private searching. So here's the deal. Head over to Surfshark.com/steal or use the code STEAL at checkout, and you'll get 4 extra months of Surfshark VPN absolutely free. And yes, it comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Surfshark VPN, it's time to take control of your online security. Surfshark.com/STEELE or code STEAL at checkout for 4 extra months of Surfshark VPN for free. Surfshark.com/steal.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
The weather may be cooling down, but the deals are heating up during the Red Hot Sale event at Omaha Steaks. Save 50% site-wide on legendary steaks, beefy burgers, cozy comfort meals, and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOTSALE when you shop omahasteaks.com today. From tailgating essentials to everyday family favorites, the Red Hot Sale event is your chance to save big on everything you need to serve up fabulous fall flavor. USDA-certified tender steaks, plump and juicy air-chilled chicken, easy appetizers, and even cozy comfort meals for those busy weeknights. And every bite is backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Don't wait. Blaze a trail to OmahaSteaks.com to save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during the Red Hot Sale event. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOTSALE at checkout. That's OmahaSteaks.com, code HOTSALE. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, everybody, to Michael Steele Podcast, hanging with my buddy Sam Stein, who's taking a moment from all the work he's doing as the managing editor over at our platform, The Bulwark. So, Sam, you had the Supreme Court has been in the news a lot for a lot of different reasons, largely related to cases that are flowing through the system. But you had the death last week of a justice, David Souter, appointed by George Bush. And certainly he was no longer on the court, but it got a lot of folks, I think, thinking about, you know, the style of the man relative to the changes in the court, what the court of the future looks like. Are you hearing or seeing any movement towards in either this administration or future administrations, Democrat or Republican, a relook, a redo of the Supreme Court anyway?
Not really. I mean, there was talk early on in the Biden era of like trying to plow forward with Supreme Court reforms. And you remember Biden put together a commission to study, right, which is like classically, no thanks. I think it would be worth doing because, you know, what we've ended up with is a very political body. And there's no incentive to depoliticize it unless both parties jump into those waters together. What struck me about the Souter news is just seeing, like, he retired at what, 69 years old, was it?
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, can you imagine? Like, that wasn't that long ago, but like, there is no incentive for anyone to step down now unless your party's controlling power. So, I happen to be interested in some court reforms, but in terms of the political movement behind them, it seems pretty much dead right now.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I too am very supportive of some court reforms. I largely think that the Congress needs to impose ethics requirements as they do on all other federal benches.
Right.
I'm not sure about tinkering with the number. I'm not wholly convinced that changes too much of anything, but I love the idea of term limits. I love the idea of, okay, you're on the court for 16 years, or we can do the math to figure out the right sweet spot for that.
Sure.
But this idea of a life appointment absent some type of ethical safeguards, to me has contributed to the rot and the distrust that has grown. And the lack of it, a lack of the independence, I think, for the court.
Well, and there's also the question of, like, you know, should you do term limits and then allow each president, you know, a certain number of appointments to make sure that everyone feels like they have buy into the system? You know, should you do age limits? That's a little bit more complicated. And then, of course, you know, there's other reforms that you should consider. Now conservatives are kind of running over to them, but like national injunctions, for instance, was, you know, it's funny to see Stephen Miller and the gang go crazy over these district judges having these national injunctions. And it's like, yeah, but this was working in your favor under Biden, right? Like all the, like,
right,
DACA, you know, they put that one on ice too. Student loan relief put that on ice. And so, you know, there's a whole host of different reforms that probably need to be seriously addressed, but there's just no political capital to do it. Any party in power inherently, we either look like it's exercising an incredible power grab, or they, you know, happen to, you know, not want to do it at that point in time.
So let's go kick a little ass. What do you think the Democrats need to do right now? You got that ass donkey.
I get Democrat. It. Okay. I've heard better jokes. I would say I don't know. Where do you come down on this? Like, there's the debate right now where it's like, you know, they need to moderate and they should therefore adopt moderate policies. Or is it that they need to show they're sort of, you know, generationally changing? Or maybe they don't need to do anything at all because, you know, it's always going to be a referendum in the midterms. And look at these special election results. They're doing great. I kind of jump between a few of those. And before I give you my answer, mm-hmm. I want to hear yours.
So if you know anything about me, and
this is the first time we've met.
Right, first time we've met. I'm going to redefine the edge. And I'm going to do everything I can to cut you with it. And okay. And that's what the Democrats do not have a propensity towards a political fight.
So you just say slash. Just
I say, down. I say, look, what I did in when I was a county chairman outgunned here in Prince George's County, 58,000 Republicans to 800,000 citizens, right?
Right.
What I did as state party chairman outgunned 2-1 in Democratic registration, yet I got a governor elected in 2002.
Right.
I happened to be on the ballot. That may have helped, may not have helped, but we had a plan. And the plan was to fight, right? It was to fight, to lean into the opposition. When I got to the RNC, it was no different. Outnumbered, outgunned, 70% plus approval for Barack Obama. Our brand was in the toilet. We were hemorrhaging voters and money. I had a lot of internal fighting. You know, the political establishment didn't like me or trust me, even though they knew me. Probably that's why they didn't like me or trust me. And I was not a person who play well with others.
Well, let me talk. Let's stop there for a second, because this is the most interesting parallel, which is 2009-2025, right? Like, is this what you see like a lot of discontent among Democrats? The party's not very popular. But if I remember, in 2009, the Republican Party wasn't very popular either.
Nope.
And there was a lot of discontent. The Tea Party was on the rise. And there's a lot of questions about whether they were going to fumble the ball because of it, right? And it turned out it was like, you know, obviously a historic election for the party. I'm kind of inching towards this being similar to that, but maybe that was because of Obamacare and that was a unique situation, or maybe not.
Well, yeah, but you can have Obamacare, but if you don't define what Obamacare means to people, look, it's a parallel thing. I've got to know what we're going for, what we're doing, and I've got to be able to convince my team this is the way to go. And that was very hard to do. Right. I had a lot of people in January of 2010, Karl Rove, I'll never forget the op-ed he did in the Wall Street Journal, basically lighting my ass up, saying, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm an awful chairman. We'd be lucky if we get 30 seats out of this election. Well, we got 63, bitch, right? And I picked up almost 1,000.
Have you ever brought that up to him directly?
Oh, he and I've laughed about it. Yeah. Carl's a good guy. I mean, I've got no beef with Carl. He still had one with me, but you know, 1,000 state legislative races. You know how we got those? I focused on it. No one in the party ever focused on winning state legislative races. Right? Right? You want to change the game where the game is changed. How do you, you know, if you want the, if, how do you get control of the courts? Congressional districts.
Yeah.
How do you get control of congressional districts? You draw the lines. And who draws the lines?
State legislatures.
There you go.
Well, there's some state Supreme Courts that can have some say, but yes, I hear you.
But what I'm just saying is you've got to have a forward-looking strategy. Now, look, you can't account for every outcome and the behavior of every politician that gets elected.
Sure.
I mean, we're all sitting here looking at some of the folks that we've worked with over the years and go, who the hell is that person in the land of Trump?
Right.
But the reality of it is that's, for me, Sam, the way the Democrats need to sort of look at this is, what's the multi-layered strategy here, right? Number one. But then what is your messaging? What was my messaging in 2010? Fire Pelosi.
Right.
Right? You want your garbage picked up? Fire Pelosi. You want to change the Congress? Fire Pelosi.
Yeah, and see, that's where it might be different. I don't think Mike Johnson is that type. I mean, this is not a Mike Johnson election, right? This is a...
It's not a Mike Johnson election.
This is a Donald Trump election. There's
so many other things that will substitute for Mike Johnson.
Right, right.
You know?
So, I mean, my sense is that the question was, where do Democrats stand and what should they do? I think honestly, they need to find one or two things which resonate with the public. And it could be, honestly, it could be the corruption, right? Like that could be it. It worked. That's what worked for them in 06. It was a corruption thing. And then kind of just hammer away. And yes, there's going to be divisions in the party over like ideology and philosophy and what policies to emphasize. But if you can say Donald Trump is corrupt and Donald Trump has not done anything to make your life meaningfully better with respect to costs, so then I think that's a winning formula.
That works better than a conversation around birthright citizenship, emoluments clause, etc.
Yes. I mean, yes, it does. Now, the emoluments clause does get into the corruption stuff.
Right.
But an argument over birthright. Here's the thing. I think you can argue the morality of the immigration stuff totally fine. I think what you say is, well, I'm not a strategist. So no one should be listening to me be like, that's the guy. No, I'm just throwing out an idea here. But the birthright citizenship, the deportation stuff, that's a form of corruption. All right. It's a corruption against the Constitution. And if you can frame it like that, then you can kind of sweep it into one.
I like that framing. What about the economy? I've been saying for a number of months. I mean, I minored in economics, and so I know a little bit of how numbers work and how they flow. And I've been saying for a few months, along with a few other folks, that the impact of what Trump has done, even though he's trying to clean up on aisle 9 through 20 right now, right, has already been set in motion and will be realized at the end of this month, beginning of June, and it's starting to come into focus.
Yeah, we'll see.
For a lot of folks, how does the economic piece play relative to that messaging?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, what is it? It's May 14th, 2025. Mm-hmm. We have so much time. Like, we have so much time. So we just don't know where we're going to be economically. But let's say in theory, the elections were in like 6 months. Then yeah, I think there's a lot to run on here. If you're a Democrat, it's all self-inflicted damage that he's created. You can easily say we handed him, and he'll protest, but like we handed him a pretty good economy with low inflation, low unemployment, GDP moving in the right direction. And he went and took a hammer to it. And that's factually true. Like the tariffs were self-inflicted. The fact that he had to reverse on them is not an act of negotiating genius. It's not like the art of the deal. It's just he admitted he was wrong. And, you know, going out and firing, you know, tens of thousands of workers. And these are, yes, they're government employees, but they're also, you know, blue collar people who man your parks, who work in and around government buildings, who research diseases and make sure your water's clean and all that stuff that matters. Like he fired them.
Right.
And that has a real impact. I mean, like you can say that the economy is not in a better spot, despite what he wants to say. And he promised he'd fix it on day one. And does it feel fixed to you? And you can look at the consumer sentiments, like the University of Michigan consumer sentiment data, that people don't think the economy is going in the right direction. They're fearful about where the economy is going. So again, we're very, 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 very far away. We don't know what the economy is going to look like in a year from now. But there is fodder for Democrats here for sure.
So before I let you go, I want to have a little fun with you. So you mentioned her a little bit earlier, a little Laura Loomer. You guys had a little Twitter back and forth there.
What was that about?
What? That's what I was going to ask you, bro. What was that about?
Well, I don't think she went after me. I didn't get loomered. Let's just be, I want to be very
No,
clear.
You did not get loomered. You just did not.
Yeah. So what's happening here is, this is the backstory. Will Summer, who
you asked the question, is Will, Laura Loomer for sale?
Okay. I was posting an article we reported from Will Summer about whether or not Laura Loomer's for sale. And by that, we mean there's accusations flying around that she's running some sort of payola scheme because suddenly she's tweeting about Venezuelan oil prices.
Right.
It's like, where did that come from, Laura? I haven't really tweeted about that ever. This was not an accusation I made. Kayleigh Means, a top Robert F. Kennedy advisor whose sister is being nominated for Surgeon General, has publicly accused Laura Loomer of attacking his sister because she's paid for by someone. He hasn't specified. but she has been pretty viciously attacking Casey Means, his sister. And so Loomer denied it to Will Summer. She says she's not paid for her work. She's just out there doing the vetting that everyone needs to do. But this is like getting a lot of buzz in MAGA circles, and Will noticed it and he did the reporting. And then I tweeted the article innocently enough, as a good editor does, trying to promote the work of his reporters. And I got loomered.
You did.
I got loomered for it.
You did. You did. It was so funny. It's just the way, you know, she just sort of came at it and you're like, oh, okay.
In typically understated fashion. Yes.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. You know, you're misogynistic. I can't have my own companies. No,
I was just asking. Companies,
but it does matter who pays you.
Yes. If you're paid for, and this is the other thing though, there's like a pretty lengthy history now of people in this sphere getting paid to post. And so there's not like, it's not like this is like non-contextualized.
I thought she protested a bit too much. Maybe. And went on, had to explain way too much and just sort of couch it. And when look,
you may have read similarly to some people here. Yes.
Yeah. I was like, okay, all right. You see, in any other world, you'd go, please, and move on. But no, you got to go into the whole, if you can't beat them, make them join. I mean, make them like you quotes. I'm like, please spare me. All right. Well, Sam Stein, you keep doing you, boo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. I'll always call you.
You do it well, my friend. You do it well. It's a real treat to spend a little bit of time with you to get some insights on the stories you're writing. And
thank you, man. I know you're going to be insufferable this fall because of the Commanders and how good they are, and it's going to be so annoying.
You know, I'm going to tell you. Yes, it will be. It's almost damn near 40 years. We need to party about something. Shit. It's been.
You excited for RFK Stadium back?
And I know it's going to be branded by whoever puts up the most money to help build it.
Oh, it's going to be MAGA Stadium or something.
All right. Oh God, help me on that one. But I would love if they could keep the name RFK Stadium. They probably won't, but it's just from that standpoint. Yes, having it back in DC. I say that. As a native Washingtonian, not as the former lieutenant governor of Maryland, where the Commanders currently play.
There's some old footage. Isn't there some old footage of you at RFK?
Yeah, an old Redskins game. Yeah, I'm in the real, baby. Wearing my members only jacket.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, when it happens, let's catch a game, okay?
You got it, my friend. Sam Stein, he is the one and only, the managing editor for the Bulwark. It's always a pleasure, my friend, to have you on board. Folks, thank you for spending time with us. You know I love it when you do that voodoo of downloads and likes and all that good stuff. It makes all the people at the Bulwark very happy, especially.
It does. Especially me.
this is my boss right here. Come on. you guys got to pay attention, right? Let's do it. Let's do it.
Seriously, yes.
And remember what I always tell you, folks, don't play with stupid, okay? Because you become stupid. So there we go. All right. Take care.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.